You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Thunder, 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 Thundercats! Ho!
Sword of Omens, come to my hand. I, Lion-O, command it. Hi, this is Larry Kenny, voice of Lion-O and Thundercats and the Bluegrass and Silverhawks and the voice of Sonny the Cocoa Puffs Bird and Count Chocula and so much more. Forget that, though. What I'm here to tell you is listen. Keep listening to the Canned Air Podcast. Do it!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Canned Air, your tribute to comics and pop culture. I am Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
And I'm Randy Hardenbrook.
And joining us today from Premium Edition Games, the Switch Mania Playcast, he's written some awesome freaking books. We welcome Jeff Wittenhagen to the show. Jeff, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me on.
We're going to have a good time today in our retro roundtable. We're going to be talking about our favorite indie games, which I'm hoping you guys have more picks than I do because I've got three and I've only played two of them.
So I wow. Hope,
yeah. I think Jeff's about ready to leave at this point now.
What, did I say something wrong earlier? Did I say something wrong earlier, Randy?
Oh, no, you're
okay.
Oh, that was actually...
That was an actual question. I thought I fucked up something. Okay.
I think it's just for your lack of knowing indie games. I don't
know. For shame. For shame. But when it comes to a Spider-Man conversation, then Randy will be the one who gets shamed, right?
There you go.
There we go.
We're going to be talking about our favorite indie games in the retro, and then we're going to turn our attention over to Jeff and talk about all the awesome games and just everything you guys have going on over there. It seems like a fucking dream job to have, so I can't wait to talk more about that. But before we do that, don't forget to find us on Twitter at CannedAirPod and on Instagram, canned_air, and patreon.com/CannedAirPod. You can get on there, back the show, and for some of your hard-earned dollars, we'll give you some of our hard recorded podcast. That sounded kind of pervy, didn't it? We'll just give you some extra podcasts. Very pervy. We're just going to give you podcasts you can't get for on iTunes. Okay, people. What else we got, guys? That's your guys' cue. Randy, Jack, that's you.
We're not doing it.
Yeah, we're not doing the game show anymore. So
Evergreen. Hey,
Evergreen, yes. Oh. Not Everclear, Jack. Evergreen. Yeah. We are proud members of the Evergreen Network, which we should be getting released on here, I'd say, next month-ish, middle of March.
The merger is happening as we speak, actually. It's, today, tomorrow, I think, is when it's happening. But, yeah, we'll officially be, like, press release and all that shit will be early March. So it's happening, though. We're excited.
So,
yes,
sir.
You got that right.
No changes for the but hey, don't worry, listeners, because you're still going to hear us, and nothing's changing on your end other than we're just going to get some steroids pumped into the show, get a lot more endorsements, and just looking forward to a lot of the opportunities that Evergreen's going to present us.
We finally got us a piece of that pie, is what Randy's trying to say. So, all right, let's kick it off with this week's Retro Roundtable.
Here we go!
All right, favorite indie games. Who wants to kick us off? Randy, go for it.
I'm going to go indie PC game back from the early 90s. So back in the day, a lot of the shareware titles and stuff would have where you'd have the first couple episodes available and then you had to buy the rest of them. So I used to be really hooked on a game called Jazz Jackrabbit, which was a...
Nice.
I've never heard of that.
It is basically a side-scrolling shoot 'em up with a green bunny just taking out turtles. I mean, it's Sonic with a gun, essentially. And it was a lot of fun. It had a lot of pop culture references. Again, it was a shareware title, so you got to play episodes, I think, like 1 and 2 for free, and then you had to pay for the remaining episodes. But it's a lot of fun.
They should have just called it Sonic with a gun. It probably would have sold better.
How long? When?
It was like early 90s, and they did a sequel. I don't know if they did.
Sounds about right for shareware, because that's about when that was all over the place.
Yeah.
Interesting.
You guys remember a game? It's not an indie game, but what you said, Randy, just made me remember Redneck Rampage.
Oh, Redneck Rampage was ridiculous first-person shooter on the PC.
It was so fun. Didn't you have to eat like moon pies and shit to get your health back and drink beer? And then you'd have to stop and actually take a piss and then like kill chickens and shit. It was so much fun.
There were a lot of those games back in the day that just took the Wolfenstein Doom formula and took it to the next. Like Blood. Remember, it was like the Gold
River. Yeah.
And then Redneck Rampage was the ridiculous one. And then you had Postal. And then
Postal.
Yes.
Forgot about that one.
Opposite end of that, you had Chex Quest, which was the free, like, got it in the cereal the box.
Cereal version. Yeah.
They even did like a Bible version of that game. Like, you had a slingshot.
Oh, Super Noah's Ark.
That's what it was.
On Super Nintendo. Yep, Super Noah's Ark 3D, the only unlicensed game on the Super Nintendo that was released during the time frame.
Jeff, didn't you have to actually plug that into a regular Super Nintendo cart to actually even get it to work with a bypass chip and stuff?
Yeah, they couldn't figure it out back in the day, so they literally just put it in the cartridge where you had to plug in another one.
Like just any other game? It didn't matter like what other game, but...
Yeah. Yeah, it didn't even require like a Super FX chip or anything. Like the game could have just been anything.
How far we've come.
Yeah, exactly. It's like
the reverse Game Genie.
Deteriorate your games.
The Game Moocher instead of the Game Genie.
I think it's more solid than Wolfenstein was, though, on the Super Nintendo. So there is that.
True. Yeah. Duke Nukem was another fun one. I always enjoyed those games. Over to Jeff.
So I kind of jokingly said, well, start mentioning which console you want me to go with, because like I have a ton of knowledge on all systems. But I did write my first book on indie games was called NES Oddities and the Homebrew Revolution. And before we record, I showed them like I have this whole collection of indie aftermarket games behind me. The Catalyst, though, I would absolutely say would be my favorite of those. It's on the NES. It's called Battle Kid Fortress of Peril.
I've never even heard of that.
No, me either.
Yeah, so that game was released, I want to say, and I could be wrong, but it's around 2005 or 2006 by Civac Games. And the game is essentially Mega Man, but you have one-hit deaths. The music's ridiculous, but the checkpoints are so frequent that if you die, you just go back like a screen or two. And then you just got to get through this little maze. And then if you get to it, you can get to the next spot. The boss battles are like something out of a shoot 'em up bullet hell massacre. It's amazing. like the twitch you have to do. But it's so addicting that you just want to do one more try. Actually, it was one of the first games I beat. And I ended up getting, they had like a boss rush mode at the end that they'd give you a code when you beat it. And the developer created a contest to get the limited edition of Battle Kid 2. And he only releases like 10. The limited edition, whoever won the speed run. And I won the speed run. I actually beat the world record on my speed run. I recorded the thing and everything. It was ridiculous.
No shit. Wow.
And so I have both the limited edition of Battle Kid 2, and I traded, and I had the same number of Battle Kid 1, and he put him in these clamshells. It's so cool.
That is awesome.
Absolutely started my obsession with collecting NES homebrews, and I've released a few of my own now. So it's like I have 4 games that I've released on the NES homebrew over the years. Love Battle Kid Fortress of Peril. Awesome game.
Oh, man. Now, is there like any footage of this game on YouTube maybe I could check out?
Absolutely. Awesome. There's footage of it. And then on PlayAsia, they just released a Famicom version, which is almost a re-release where they refined some things in it and they created a story and everything. It's on the Famicom. It's all English, though. but it you know, it plays in like with a converter and some of the more modern consoles that have both in it. Yeah, so they just released a third game, but really it's just a rehash of the first, but it's super cool. But there's tons of stuff on YouTube on it.
I'm going to look that up because that sounds really cool. And it also kind of reminds me of I'll go next because my pick was going to be Super Meat Boy.
Oh, nice.
You guys have played
I've seen it all the time and I've been curious, but I've never played it, but I've heard it's fun.
It's very fun. It's addictive, man. It's hard to explain. You're just kind of running through these obstacle courses, but you know, very much like Jeff was saying, you know, it's kind of like the Mega Man thing, you know, if you died, it only threw you back like just a few steps. So you were just kind of right back to where you were to try again. And it also had kind of like the wall sliding mechanism that Mega Man kind of had, you know, but he was so hard to control. He was almost kind of like Luigi in Super Mario 2, where he just kind of was all over the place, or, you know, when he landed, he would slide clear off the edge if you didn't pay attention. But one of the coolest features was, you know, as hard as these things were to pass, let's say it took you 99 tries to do it. At the end, once you beat it, you can see all 99 attempts play over the top of each other.
And oh my God.
It's so freaking cool. It's so cool.
And he's made of meat, so there's like, it looks like blood everywhere when he blows up. And like, he leaves a trail of meat.
There's like that squishy sound when he walks too, like, it's so
fun. When did you first play it?
Oh, it's been a long time ago. I think it was when the first came out.
I played it on the 360, and I think it's what caused mine to Red Ring of Death. Because we played it so much.
Dude, it was definitely on my 360, and I definitely had the Red Ring of Death. But yeah, that game wasn't there like a documentary or something that came out that followed like the guys who made that game and a few other indie games?
I was actually just pointing. I have like my Switch collection. I actually have Super Meat Boy in my like, top 40 games on the Switch. I have it physically.
It's so good.
Yeah, I think it was Edward McMullen was the creator, and they both did a documentary on it. Yeah. It was on the PC release, I want to say, of the game. I was like obsessed with it for like years. It's such a fun game.
Yeah, I don't know. There's like another movie where it follows those guys who did that film or that game, excuse me, and a
indie game,
like two or three other indie game creators, and like the
boy. Yeah. It was about the main one was they followed the creator of Fez, and he was like having a depression breakdown, and yeah, I think it's just called Indie Game the Movie, I think.
Oh, okay. How did I forget that? No, I mean I think you're right. I think you're right.
Like for real.
I think you're right. But it was interesting because, you know, these guys were waking up on the day that their games were supposed to be showing up in the Xbox Live Marketplace, and like they were all excited and then like, oh shit, where's my game at? Because it wasn't there. And like all the stress and problems that ensued after that. Like, I can't imagine doing what you and Jonathan are doing, Jeff. Like the stress, like, damn.
The crazy thing is, so that's from like the developer perspective. But back then it was like, I was saying, I recorded a podcast back then. It was the Wild West. It was the Wild West for indie games. Like, it was unheard of to release indie games at that massive a scale, and Xbox and Microsoft were treading new ground. Nowadays, I mean, with all the limited companies, you're seeing it physically, even like we're in a big, like huge bubble right now. Has it burst? No, but could it? Maybe, because there's just so much out there. There's so much selection for gamers. And like, I just pointed, like Super Meat Boy was on my collection physically on the Switch, which is awesome. It's amazing to be able to have that in posterity. I mean, there's other games from the 360 era, like Scott Pilgrim now that's getting a physical on the Switch. And so, like, we're at a like, different era now. But back then, it was the Wild West. Like, it was so weird seeing it. And, I mean, I was, you know, I think I was in Florida at the time because I move around all the damn time. I just remember, like, it was so awesome playing these retro-inspired games. It was such a new thing at the time to see it at, like, on our 360s and PS3s at the time. Like,
yeah. They're like, why aren't they using top-of-the-notch graphics here? Why are we backpedaling? But then you're so glad they did because it's like, oh, my God, these games are so much more enjoyable. Like, I played Super Meat Boy way longer than I would have played like a Call of Duty, you know, game or something.
Yeah.
It's just so much more relaxing.
I was playing Battle Kid at the time, and they got me off Battle Kid to play Super Meat Boy because it was around the same time. Like, they got me to go back on modern consoles that were collecting dust because I was just playing my NES.
Right.
Like,
well, they know their customer, right? All righty. Well, let's move over to Jackery.
Mine is called Dead Cells. It came out a few years ago, and it's got that, well, it looks like a 16-bit graphic look, and it's a side-scroller beat-em-up, but it's the point of the game basically is you have to die. It's so hard, but as you die, you collect different weapons, but you unlock those weapons, so you can actually choose from them at the very beginning. But there's, I don't even know how many hours I've put into that stupid game, and I know I haven't even come close because it's so hard, and you only get one life. But you can go through and pick different, you know, get a little bit more health, do more damage, but at the same time, it just gets harder and harder and harder.
Hmm.
So that's like your roguelike. It's like your roguelike is what that is, the Dead Cells series. Yep. Like, there's a whole innovative genre now where it's like that one more time and they just edge you along a little bit so you keep playing the damn thing. Mm-hmm. Like, so addictive.
And, but there's different paths you can go to, so it's not really, it doesn't get boring because you can be like, well, I'm going to go this direction. And the maps change every time you play, too, so it's not like you can memorize everything. You get a little bit of ideas where the enemies are, but or the bosses, but yeah, it's almost a new game every single time. And the amount of weapons you get is crazy that you can just keep playing and playing and playing. Game's so fun.
I need to try that one. You still have it?
Yep, it's on, I got a PS4. I'm pretty sure it's on Xbox, too, though.
Is it?
Yeah, I want to say it's on everything. I think it's on Switch,
I have it physically
too.
On the Switch. I have a physical copy of it.
Awesome. Well, then it's probably in the Switch marketplace then, too, right? If there's a physical, yeah.
Cool.
It might be on Xbox Game Pass. Dude, there's so many indie games on Xbox Game Pass right now. It's ridiculous. Like, that's how I play all my stuff now. Like, if it's coming out physically on the Switch, I'm like, oh, it's for free right now on Xbox Game Pass. Let me try it.
Yeah. My Switch is not
still buy it.
My Switch is the only console that's still kind of surviving. My Xbox is really kind of on its last leg. Holy shit, look at that.
Jeez.
I just pan over my camera. I got my Switch kiosk. Like, I was literally playing Switch before we recorded.
That is freaking cool. That is awesome.
Bit insane.
Oh, well, that brings us back around to Randy.
So I'm going to try and redeem myself on this one. More recent indie game I've played. It's called Papers, Please. And basically what it is it's a simulator where you take control of basically a immigration inspector for this Cold War style company or country that just opened
up. Really?
No, dude, it sounds boring as hell, but you get into it and it is freaking amazing. It is literally like a mix between Carmen Sandiego and Oregon Trail. So basically it's like a day cycle and it's a timer and you have so many minutes to go through and either approve or deny all these people coming through, and you have rules and stuff you got to check. But if you do something wrong or something, it could be a terrorist you let through. So there's like this little background image of them like walking through the kiosk and they'll like literally blow some shit up. But at the end of your work day, it comes up with a list of like, okay, hey, your kid had to eat today. Somebody got sick and got medicine and like this is what you made. So it's literally like a money management style simulator as well. So it's set in like 82 and the graphics are just very drab. It feels very Cold War-ish, if that makes sense. But,
and then you die of dysentery.
Go all the way back to Oregon Trail.
I mean, you can literally tell the game like, okay, the kids aren't eating tomorrow, so I can save money. And it's just, it does follow a storyline. You have like, I think a couple weeks worth to get through it. But it's very, like I said, it seems really weird until you get into it and then you get addicted because you're like scanning these passports like, oh, well, hey, this picture doesn't match you. And you can like interrogate them and it's a lot of fun.
Hmm. A job at the post office would probably be thrilling for you.
Then he starts playing Postal, like we talked about earlier.
Oh, yeah, there we go. It comes full circle.
Wow.
That does sound interesting, though. Where do you play that, Randy, on your Switch?
It's on PC. You have to use the mouse. It might be on other consoles, but I played it on PC.
Yeah, I've never heard of that. Wow.
Papers.
Check it out on YouTube. It's Papers, Please.
Papers, Please.
Papers,
Please. Give me the papers, please. Denied.
So I thought you were going to say, you said 80s. I thought you were going to go back to like World War II. I'm like, well, okay.
We don't want to play that one.
Give me the papers.
Give me some papers.
No.
Randy, what are you playing?
You're going to love it. All right. That brings us back around to Jeff.
So you guys are going with some modern stuff, so I can go with a modern one. I'm not going to shill and talk about my own titles, because everything we release is indie, by the way. So I can do a dry run at the end, and we can talk about some of them. But like when we do it, we'll talk about the titles, because they're all really cool. I assume. So I will go something that's in my top five on the Nintendo Switch. It's an indie game. It's called Axiom Verge. Axiom Verge is what they call a Metroidvania. It was programmed by one person, Thomas Happ. Like, it's programmed by one dude. And it is amazing. It's the most retro-inspired synth-wave music. You go through and you're just running through all the corridors, getting all your power-ups as you progress. You get to look at the map and see it unfold and see places you can't go to that you'll go to later. And it's exactly what you want in a Metroid. It's way more Metroid than Vania. Like, it is really, really awesome. Has a story that unfolds. It's all, like, creepy dystopian futures with lots of giant head like robot looking things that you come across that talk to you, and like it is rad.
Cool.
And I think he's doing a sequel very soon. Like I think Nintendo Direct announced that they were doing a sequel to Axiom awesome. Verge, which it's just a single guy programmed it, though. It's so amazing about it. And amazing. Like, that's what makes it indie to me, is it's like, all right, this is awesome. This is amazing. They did a full, like, giant physical for it on the Switch, like, a few years back that I had to pick up.
Oh, wow.
At that point, I already played it, I think, on my Vita or something. Like, I don't even know if I have it on my Vita. I might not. I don't even know. Maybe it's PS3. Huh?
You said Axiom Verge was the name?
Yeah, with A-X-I-O-M. Axiom Verge. Really rad game.
Okay, it's in my writing top five it down. Sure. I want to look that up. That sounds awesome.
You know, it sits on my shelf among like Mario, Odyssey, and Zelda Breath of the Wild. And I have Axiom Verge over here. Along with
so
a
it's that
other,
good.
Like,
it's good enough titles. To sit on the shelf amongst it. Those ranks. Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, I've so seen I, this on so Steam I, before. I've so almost
I,
gotten
I got my collection, but then in the closet, I got the top five of all the collector stuff, and that's where Oxium's at in my collection. Wow. Like, it's one of the top, one of my favorites.
What
sure.
an honor. that's awesome. No, I've got the same thing with toys. Like, I got a general toy shelf, and then I have this one place over here where the best of the best. My turtle prey station is what I call it, yeah.
Yeah, like, I mean, I created my own shelving to display my Switch collection, which originally was NES, but I got too many Switch games. My Switch collection outgrew it, so I had to move the top five from the top over into another section. And constant flux is the collections.
Candles burning on either
walking
side.
In and just
I'm sorry, Randy. I didn't mean to cut you off, buddy. What were you saying?
I had this mental image of just Jeff walking in with a new Switch game and just taking his hand and knocking all the Nintendo games off.
I mean, it happened.
This is your
this
new
weekend.
nice.
This weekend. And this is an indie game. This is an amazing indie game. And it just was released. Don't want to spoil it. It's a good one.
yeah. Anybody can take a place on that shelf, it seems, right?
Well, I mean, it just has to connect, right?
I guess so.
My own personal ones are going to have their own section because I've released them. I'm not going to. They'll be with the regular collection, but like the top ones, I'll just have it somewhere else. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would too if I were you. Because this is my work right them. Here. This is what I have done. I would do that for sure. Total. I mean, we have our awards and shit hanging on the wall in here. So I guess we are kind of fluffing ourselves, aren't we, guys?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little bit.
I mean, I'll explain what these are later too.
All right. Every time you turn that camera, we see like tons more of awesome goodness. You're in an awesome little room there, aren't you? I mean, it doesn't even look little. It has to be big to have a freaking that is awesome.
Nice. a Nintendo television just right there with the NES games. Like, I just got stuff everywhere. I am crunched in here. It's just one bedroom. Like, that's all I got to limit myself. Otherwise, I just keep buying things. I got to scope creep. Yeah. That's the collector mentality. Like, I can't collect figures and comics anymore because I had to hone it in.
I keep saying that, but then I keep buying them. So I'm just like, okay, I'm going to have to, like, find... If I buy, like, the USS flag, I'm just going to have to sleep on it and get rid of the bed, like, to justify having it. You know what I mean?
Because it is big enough.
It's big enough.
It is.
It's big enough. All right. That was Jeff's pick, correct?
That was me.
Yeah.
That
All
was
right.
Long, yeah.
The next one I have is, you guys have probably heard of it, Goat Simulator.
Yes. Oh, yes.
That's a fun little game now. And
it's one of my daughter's like favorite games on the Switch to play. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, because it's so, I mean, there's really no point to it. It's just kind of like a stress thing, right? I mean, you're just running this goat around and jumping him around and kind of ragdolling him into stuff. Like, it's just, there's no point other than just to see what happens. And it's so much fun. Like, how simple an idea and what a great idea at the same time, you know? Like, we don't have to give him a purpose. Just go have fun with him. I love that.
Run into cars and get thrown.
Well, it kind of reminds me of, even though they're not even similar games, but just, I guess, kind of the environments. What was that Katamari game where you just roll the big ball around, picking shit up for no apparent reason? That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, Katamari Damacy?
Yeah.
That sounds right.
Yeah, I think
that was the PS2 version. There's like several of them, but that was the PS2 version.
And I think there was like a point system. Certain objects you picked up got you more points. So, I mean, it was an actual game, but anytime I played it, it wasn't like watching the score. I was just having fun picking shit up, and it was relaxing, you know? And the same kind of thing that came from Goat Simulator. Just, I love watching that goat get beat up at, you know, at my expense. It's awesome.
It's pretty much how it is when I play GTA. I don't do anything but just screw around and end up dying and killing other people. And that's just playing during the story mode. I ended up just screwing around the whole time. I don't follow the story at all.
The online now
my wife's been playing GTA Online. I think she has over 100 hours. I think over 1,000 hours. Some of the amount of days. She's like a mob boss in it. She never played the story mode and just fucks around online. That's what she does.
All the GTAs. I have no idea the story in any of them. I do the first couple missions, and then all of a sudden I'm like, I'm going to go over here. I'm going to check this out. And then the cops come after me, then I die, then I start over, and then it just starts over again.
GTA Online is freaking fun. I mean, it used to be a lot better, but they kind of gave the players too much, like... Those flying fucking motorcycles with the rockets on them. Everybody has them. And anytime you drive down the road, you get your ass blown up. It's like not even worth like getting your nice car out because you're just going to keep having to go pick it up at the insurance company. You know what I mean? Like, they make it unplayable sometimes, those kind of people.
You got to pick the certain times of day that you go play on so you can actually do something.
That doesn't work anymore.
Do it in the evening. Oh, really?
Yeah, you get on at 3 in the morning and Vietnamese children are blowing your ass to hell instead of people in Arkansas.
As big as it is on Twitch streaming now, it doesn't surprise me because there's always someone streaming a game and GTA is one of the big ones.
Yeah. But it just gets to the point where it's just like, man, I don't even fuck with it. See, because even if you just want to do your missions or like, you know, work on your bunker or your nightclub or do drug runs, whatever, you can't. Because just there's always someone there just to blow you away immediately. So you just get pissed, like, fuck this game. And then you turn on Super Meat Boy.
And then you get angry.
But it's a healthier angry, I think, with Super Meat Boy.
Controlled anger. You're bringing the anger, not the children. Calling you a Christmas noob and shooting you.
All right, we got time one more. So, Jack, what you got?
Mine, I'm pretty sure it's classed as indie. Maybe not so much anymore because they gained a lot of traction and rewards in the last couple of years. But Hellblade, Senua's Sacrifice.
I've never played that.
It is I don't even know what kind of... It's just a behind-the-shoulder, third-person, not shooter, just fighting game, basically. And it's about this girl that comes home to find her man was sacrificed by a bunch of Vikings. It takes place way back in the Viking times. Mm-hmm. And she is already suffers from a psychosis, so she's not quite right in the head. But then her whole mission is to go find Hela and try to get her man's soul back. And she's willing to do whatever. But the best part of the graphics are amazing in the game. They did a bunch of like secret photographic stuff that they did. There's a featurette that comes with the game that goes a lot into the making of it. And the game itself, you have to play it with headphones on because they did a lot with 3D sound to where you're experiencing a lot of the psychosis that the main character's experiencing. So the whole time you're hearing people all around you whisper, talk to you in your voice.
Like 360 total stereo.
Yeah. Yeah. I tried playing it just through the TV and it's nowhere even near as close, especially when people get right in your ear, just like, go over there and do this. It's so creepy, but the story is so good. It's crazy. And the graphics are great.
I've tried doing that effect on the show before, like on past Halloween episodes. And then like when I'm getting ready for a new Halloween episode, I'll kind of, you know, revisit our old ones to make sure I'm not repeating myself. And then I'll like hear footsteps behind me. Like, what the fuck was that? You know, it's just in the recording. But it's funny, you know, that reminds me of one of the Arkham games, those Batman games where you're fighting with, who was it? I think maybe Scarecrow, because they were even like... They weren't just fucking with Batman in the game. Like, it was actually, like, fucking with you. Because, like, you'd be playing, and all of a sudden, like, the screen would glitch. And it looked like the game had frozen. And so you'd start going, what's going on? Like, why is it acting like this? And, like, you'd be walking down, like, a hallway in a prison. And then, like, piece by piece, it turns into an alley, you know, in the back part of Gotham. Like, it just kept messing with your mind. It was really cool.
Is it crazier that I know more about Super Meat Boy than about Batman?
No, it's perfectly normal. I think we're the ones with problems.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
There's one part in Hellblade that it makes you use your other senses, too, because there's one point where everything's super blurred and dark to where you can't see where you're going, but you have to follow a stream. So you actually have to listen to where the water gets... like centralized in your ear to be able to find your way out.
Oh, no shit.
Or else you get lost.
That's crazy.
I've not been paying attention, got off the wrong track, and I've had a hell of a time trying to get back.
Okay, so that's interesting. You're saying, like, when you're moving your head, the sound isn't moving with you. You're moving within a 3D kind of like stereo soundscape.
If you move your character, like, in different directions, the sound does turn.
I see.
So you had to follow. If you turn left too much and you hear the water on your left, you have to turn or right. Or no, left. You'd have to turn left.
I see.
To follow it, yeah.
Sounds like it's made for VR or something.
Yeah, it does. Yeah,
I guess they did implement it in VR, but it was still behind the shoulder. So it wasn't quite as so much VR. You're just like maybe a parrot sitting on her shoulder, the view that you get. But it was still super immersive.
Interesting. All right. Well, any other picks then before we move on, gentlemen?
That's good for me.
That's good for Jack. That's good for Randy. Good for Jeff. I mean, that's good for me.
I got infinite games in the chute. But, you know.
I'm sure.
There's only so much time in the day.
Not the truth. All right, then we're going to jump to a quick commercial, and then we'll be right back. All right, and we are back from said commercial break. That feels weird doing that, guys. That's the first time we've thrown those commercial things in there. It's going to be weird to the commercials.
You didn't even take a breath.
I don't have to. They just put them in there somehow. I don't know how they do it. It's magic.
Everclear, you all promised me earlier for the break.
That was the best commercial break ever. I didn't even hear it. All right. So, Jeff, let's talk about, again, a premium edition games. Let's, to start anyway, you know, there's other things we need to talk about. Your Switch collector books. I do want to talk about Switch Mania Playcast, but it seems premium edition games is kind of where you guys are really focusing right now.
Yeah. So, I mean, and it goes along with the theme of the episode. We're talking indie titles because... essentially, you can even ask my siblings. Like, the goal was always to publish Nintendo games back in the day when I wanted to, I wanted to make games. That's what we all wanted to do growing up as kids. And you know, a few years back, I was like, what the heck? Let me just apply at Nintendo and see if they'll allow me to be a third-party publisher. Took a couple years to come through, and then eventually they're like, all right, you're good to go. And I'm like, really? And enter a conversation that I had with Jonathan Poland, who we were doing our Switch Mania Playcast at the time, and he's like, no, really? Like, we started, and he has a huge network of people as JP Switch Mania, and I have a huge network as, you know, publishing video game books and in the indie scene and going to conventions and things. And so, like, we just started reaching out to small-time developers, and our goal is retro-style indie. Like, one of our themes is, like, modern retro done right. And our first two titles that we're doing, completely both indie titles created by one developer each. So we're doing Super Blood Hockey, which is essentially NES ice hockey with blood everywhere, created by one guy, Loren Lemke. Ridiculous game. And like, it was one of those things that a few years back we heard all about it, like when it was coming out, and then it was on the digital eShop, and the eShop on the Switch is so convoluted that you really couldn't find any of the great stuff out there. And I remembered it, and I mentioned it, and we reached out to the developer, and he's like, heck yeah, absolutely, you can, right. we can you know, publish this physically. And so that was our first one that we really secured, that we really wanted to do. The other thing is, then when you go on Nintendo's website, it's very obtuse, as a Nintendo it is. But there's something on there that said it's a MAC, a multi-application card. And I just looked into it, read up on it. Essentially, you can put four eShop games on one Nintendo Switch cartridge. And they all pop up as individual things. And so there's this one developer we were talking to, like, she made four different games on the Switch, and they're all indie titles. Awesome P, 1 and 2, or 2 of the games. And those games got a lot of exposure, and a lot of people were interested in it. And so we were like, these are really cool. She said, well, I also have Bucket Knight, Explosive Jake, and these other games that are, you know, indie titles as well. So we put all four on one cartridge. And so, like, we have, like, that's this awesome quad pack for our second release of indie titles, Game Boy-inspired, like, really cool things. And she's out in Russia, doesn't read English. So we're using, like, a mediator to do all this. And we did a full comprehensive hardcover strategy guide with this game as well. Like, complete with an interview with her. Yeah, it's so cool. Like, it's the way to go. It's, like, ridiculous. Yeah, so that's what we're calling our first series, which is essentially we wanted to do only two games, and we're going very slow with our releases. We're not going to be that company that has a launch and a title every other week. Like, that's not how we roll. We're both keeping it as a passionate hobby that we happen to, you know, do a lot of times. Like, JP is literally, I think, working on stuff now instead of being on the cast with us, but on the podcast. So we already have a bunch of other games signed for future series, and there's two other games we can talk about that we have announced. And I alluded to something that's sitting behind me. Yeah. So essentially, right here on the bottom, I can't talk about the top one because we haven't announced it yet. But this bottom one, this is both canvas art paintings. And so we had an artist that actually painted those on canvas. So this game right here is called A Robot Named Fight. When we're talking Metroidvania, so we're talking my pick of Oxygen Verge combined with Dead Cells, right? Mm-hmm. Which is a roguelike. Well, this game is called a Rogavania. It's literally like a Metroid-style roguelike. There are over a million different combinations through this Metroid game, and you will die a lot in the game. It's ridiculous. And so we had an artist that commissioned the painting and we're doing a retro edition that's inspired by Super Metroid on Super Nintendo box with original art that I'm going to create just like they did back in the 90s.
That's freaking awesome.
I'm going to do the same with the one above it that I can't talk about the game. And then, but that game is going to be in our second series. It's like one of our favorite games that we're going to be releasing in there. And we announced that when we announced the others, and people have been clamoring for it. We're working on getting a vinyl release for it, like doing all the bells and whistles for it. We're going to do a full comprehensive strategy guide, everything. I like doing things old school. That's just me. Like, if I know a way that they develop things, because I've talked to guys at conventions who made box art. Like, I talked with, you know, the guys, like, Tom Dubois, who did Konami, essentially. He's super expensive. I can't afford him yet. But more mainstream. But when I find out how they do it, I'm like, all right, so that's how I'm going to commission my art, because I want to do it the old school way. Like, that's just it.
Well, you know, it's funny ridiculous. Because the people who would be, I guess all ages are playing, you know, 8, 16, 32-bit games now. But, you know, those of us who grew up with it, no matter how the gaming industry changes and, you know, you go from cartridges to discs to just being able to download and, you know, everything back gets flashier. Everything looks exactly back to cartridges. But everything, I guess my point being, gets flashier and more uniform. But when we see that stuff, when we see that retro stuff, at least in my case, it excites a part of me still that these newer things just can't touch. And that's what I'm seeing behind you on the wall there. So I get why people, you know, would be clamoring for that.
Oh, we haven't even shown that off yet. Like I'm doing this stuff behind the scenes, pre-gaming our next releases the old school way. Our first two, we didn't quite do it that way. We just put out our two games. And now people are like, we're premium edition games. We're doing stuff. So when is this episode going to air? Because if we have a week, I can spoil something. If it's going up like tomorrow.
No, it's probably going to be, I'd say, Friday, Saturday-ish.
Okay, so we did something that we did that was unannounced, and we've done a few other things. So the stuff that's non-spoiler-ish is we're doing this thing called a challenge card. So a lot of the companies will put a trading card with the release. Okay. On the back of our trading card has a developer-created challenge. So in Super Blood Hockey, it says, take a life in league mode. You can actually kill the players and, like, kill other players. And so you take a life. You take a picture of the card, and the instructions are on the back. You tag us online, which gets us some exposure. And I personally, at the house, I will mail you a challenge patch with Super Blood Hockey on it, sewn on this handy dandy jean jacket.
Dude,
that is awesome now.
And I'm getting, awesome. And then Awesome P, we have another challenge, and I got a patch.
I'm getting so many, like, Nintendo Power, Atari Club vibes right now.
Exactly.
Yeah, that was Activision that did that back in the day on the PlayStation. Yeah, yeah. That was my wheelhouse. I had the River Raiders patch, and I'm like,
nice.
I want to do something. I was like, if I'm ever a publisher, I'm going to do something like that. So that's another thing we're doing that's, like, super retro and cool. And then on top of it, the spoilers thing, we're doing this premium slipcase that we have a artist, Paul Niemeyer, that did it. Paul Niemeyer is the artist who did the Mortal Kombat Dragon, as well as Satan's Hollow and Super Pac-Man and Tron and a bunch of other stuff. Jaws 3 in the movies, like, he did a bunch of movie posters. Like the guy is a legend. He's doing all of our slipcases. Well, inside said slipcase, we're doing another bonus that we haven't even announced that is literally going to be almost like the NES cartridge sleeve, but it's going to fit the Switch case in it, and it's going to be red to match the Switch with the logo, and it goes inside the slipcase, so it's almost like a full comprehensive box.
Wow.
And nobody's expecting it. First per people that do an unboxing is going to blow their mind. We haven't. I don't know how JP didn't spoil it yet.
That is amazing.
That's why I'm like, I can't spoil that early. Like,
that is cool as shit.
So we're called premium edition. Our regular editions, they're called our premium editions because, like, people are like, I don't know why you guys are charging, like, we're charging like $40 for our games, and they're like, oh, you're charging too much for what we're getting. I'm like, we haven't told you about everything. And we're doing full manuals. Like, my Super Blood Hockey manual, I literally had NES Ice Hockey, and I matched the aesthetics on the interior.
Oh, my God.
Nintendo made me remove that you can't lick the cartridge. I had to remove that. Because everything has to be approved by Nintendo, by the way. Like, they have to look at it and approve it. So
we want our customers to know they can lick these cartridges.
Yeah, because I had all of the same ones that don't blow in it, don't put it in water, all the stuff that it had in the NES one. And I said, don't lick the cartridges. And I had to remove all the precautions. They didn't let me keep those.
This is amazing.
And I threw an Easter egg.
This is amazing because this is literally a retro gamer releasing retro games for retro gamers. I mean, it's just everything that got you excited as a kid, you're getting again, which is, as a modern collector, you know, you get your Switch game. It doesn't even come with an instruction manual anymore, most of them.
Yeah.
And to have swag like this is just freaking amazing.
It's amazing. Well, yeah.
The interesting part is now that I'm part of the creation process, I'm looking at some of the other ones, even the ones that have manuals, and I'm like, oh, this is like a 4-page bifold. Like, I was like, oh, this is, or it doesn't even have any print on the inside of the cover. They have a clear case. Like, we have interior printing, and like Super Black, it's a giant, massive brawl because you can do 12 on 12 hockey in the game. And underneath the cartridge is another dead body. Like, just like Easter eggs all over our releases. Like, there's a spot in the game, and it's in the manual, but there's a spot in the game when you play story mode where your coach, he says, you know, just don't worry if somebody dies, just throw them in the dumpster out back. And in the manual, there's a spread, and we have a dumpster in there, and there's like a referee sitting in the dumpster. like in the manual. Like, just
I
saying.
I love that
like,
stuff, though.
Like, we just hit every piece of the of it with it, and we're working hand-in-hand, in tandem with the developers as we're doing it. My position more so is the creative part. I work on all of the different items, so I'm creating them, too. I'm not just, like, I'm working on everything on my computer with the creation. I do the same thing with my books, and so I'm almost like the CCO, chief creative officer, almost, for Premium, as well as a co-owner. And so I just enjoy it. I have fun. Like this weekend I was working on the retro boxes and stuff like that, and just making sure everything popped correctly, and working on the Switch cartridge labels and making sure those look cool, and trying to explain to developers, I don't want the same box art on the cartridge label. I want different art. I want something new, something cool.
That's awesome.
So one other game I could talk about is this one. Now, this painting right here is literally what I call bought art. So if I find something cool at Goodwill, I put a perler of a character from the game on there, and it is a killer teddy bear. the game, though, is ridiculous. The game's called Camp Sunshine. It was released on Steam, and the developer told us, they're like, hey, this game's coming out to Switch in the future. Are you interested? And we're creating a sequel. And so they put to Kickstarter a sequel that they're working on called Sunshine Manor. And so, like, literally in Camp Sunshine, it's almost like Friday the 13th, but it's done by, like, passionate gamers. And you just run around in almost like a Legend of Zelda-style 3D aesthetic, and all you have is a flashlight. If you step on a stick, that bear pops out of nowhere, talks like Freddy, and says, you're going to die, bitch. And he comes after and tries to kill you. You got to run out of the way and hide.
Oh, man.
There's this whole comprehensive story. The craziest thing is another one created by one guy, and he's also recorded all the evil synthwave music for it. And he's like a musician by, like, trade, or teaches music out in the UK.
Wow.
Like, the dude's, like talented as hell, and now he's working on a sequel to it, which is even crazier, which has like almost earthbound psychic abilities with it.
Really? And
that's so crazy.
And as we mentioned, multi-application cart, so why we're not going to release two cartridges, we're going to release one, because one of the hardest parts is we're one of the only U.S. there's only like three of us now that are U.S. based, like, limited, essentially, companies, like smaller companies. And there's a 5,000 print run minimum for the U.S. Everywhere else is like 3 or 2, like, thousand. So, like, we gotta produce. So it's like, let's put both games on one cartridge, make it a double pack, make it fun. But like the other companies, like, they're putting out these indie titles that they could put on one cartridge, and they're putting them out on multiple because, you know, they have the huge followings out there, so they can do that. I think that I would still put it on one cartridge because I want the gamers to get a good, you know, deal and not be able to, like, take up space on the collection. My collection is getting crazy. Like, let's put them on one.
Right.
That's my other mentality behind it, too. So, I mean, that's us in a nutshell. We have multiple versions, though. We have our, you know, premium edition that has those aesthetics that we talked about. Then we have our retro editions that we're doing that has, you know, it's almost like a Super Nintendo N64 style box because we want to fit all the goodies inside. If I did an NES box, they were too small. So we're doing like a steelbook for Pigeon Dev Games collection. but it's on like a retro TV that opens up, and it has all the TV innards on the inside.
Oh.
And we talked with the company. They've published first party Nintendo. We're the first to do like a front back, like retro style landscape steelbook.
That's nice. Awesome.
It's tactile. You can feel it. Like, it's super cool. They all fit inside the retro box. And then that retro box goes inside of another case. It's like an intricate puzzle that we do. And I had a bead as the game publishing side on Neo Geo AES boxes. Like the cases, the original ones.
Yeah.
And so we can get that in there with the CD soundtrack, and we have a pin, like a really crazy premium looking pin too, not like just a tiny pin. Like, the thing is ridiculous, has 3D tactile to it. The CD is gonna have the soundtrack on the game. And that all goes hand in hand with our guide, which I created the size, the exact size, a hardcover guide of the Neo Geo, and it fits into a slipcase that looks mirrored off of a Konami style NES box. Like ridiculousness. So like some of this stuff, like we had like JP, he has a person that worked with him called, her name's Erica, and she did a lot of his artwork and stuff for JP Switch Mania. Well, she did a lot of these mock-ups. Her idea was the Konami or Neo Geo AES case looks like almost like a Capcom NES box. Like, it's all ridiculous. It's all over the top. Took the book, though, I changed everything, and I made it look like a... So the Game Boy originally had this manual in Japan. I took this manual in Japan aesthetics, and I created a whole, like, box off of it. It's going to be 3D embossed on the cover where it's, like, soft touch feel, which is going to have a feeling for it. And then it's, like, shiny black. Instead of doing, like, a gold, we did, like, shiny black in the background, and it matches the aesthetics of the cover. And it's like, oh, yeah, but if you do this, it'll pop out a little bit. I'm like, perfect. That's what I want. Like, that's exactly what I'm looking for. People see it. Like, they're going to know, okay, this is why you're doing $40. Or, you know, like, we're not trying to, like, we're not charging it because we can. We're charging it because that's what it costs to get stuff done.
Right.
Like, we're having fun with it. And
you care a little bit more money, you know, you get your money's worth. It's, you're not getting ripped off. You're getting your money's worth and more. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah. Oh, you're good. Yeah. And so our first thing that we did in it was like August, September, we did this premium direct, which we were copying off of Nintendo Direct, but it has like our cartoon characters bouncing around on it. We're about to do our next direct. I want to say it'll be next month. We wanted to wait till our games were in hand so people could check them out first before we announce our next game, which is actually where this canvas will fit in, which is going to be our next release that we announce. And it's another really cool indie title, and it is going to be fun. And we have so much stuff up the pipeline, though. There's some games out there that are like on the top indie games lists right now that we have signed, and it's mind blowing. It's like, that's okay, awesome. You want to come with us? That's cool. That's cool. I am going to, they'll be impressed with what we do. I will tell you that. Like, that's it. Like, that's all I want to do. And so that's premium. I mean, I do lots of other stuff besides for not sleeping.
I would say the work you guys are putting in. Yeah. Jeez.
Oh, it's a lot. It's insane. I didn't realize how much until I started.
Well, on top of that, you guys are doing the Switch Mania Playcast, which is a podcast where you guys are just kind of not only talking games, but from what I was able to hear, talking about the business, you know, from your guys' perspective, which there are a million and one podcasts out there about comics, about games, about movies, but there aren't many that give that perspective. And I found that very interesting, just to hear what you guys had to say from where you guys are, and if that makes sense in the community.
It is interesting. We started just simply because like JP never plays his games, and so we were like, we're gonna do a playcast where we play a game every week. And it forces him to open stuff, and I want to play more in the backlog, because when you start collecting a lot of games, like, you get the scope creep. Like, there's too much. You don't even want to play anything because there's just too much available. And fortunately, I got a 9-year-old now that she wants to play like Mario 3D World right now. So that's what I was playing before this was. Playing Mario 3D World with my daughter, which freaking amazing. But it was like, that was the idea. And then when Premium started, like when we got the okay to start, you know, incorporating and making the company happen, we were like, why don't we just be that transparent company? Let's talk.
Yeah.
Like, the last episode we did, we talked about games that we've been playing that literally some of them we may or may not have signed. Like, we didn't spoil if we did or not, but we talked about a good half dozen games, and we were talking about what we thought about them, if we liked them, what we didn't like about them, or whatever. But and we reveal the process of how Nintendo is back and forth, and like how when I'm using certain programs, like you send it to them and then you get shot down. And you're like, no, do it again. Do it right. Or the lot checks that took forever back and forth. Like Super Blood Hockey was released 2 years ago, and it took 2 months of back and forth with like several, maybe eight iterations of bugs that they kept finding. I'm like, this game's already published. Nintendo, you're ninjas. You're crazy. Like, how are you finding this stuff? And so, like, we're going into depth, and that's, like, what a lot of people are really enjoying is just, like, pulling the curtain back and talking about things. And, you know, I mean, at this point, we're talking about UK shipping, too, even with the whole VAT taxes and things that are coming out. Like, it's insanity. And it's just, I mean, that put a pause on people in the UK being able to buy our games because we have an international distributor, Video Games Plus, and they turned it off because they had to figure it out. And they said they just turned it on today, and they said it's like 20% more, and they have to charge it. Like, it's like literally what the country is charging them to get stuff imported into their country, essentially. It's insane. But like we pull it back, we talk about it. We also talk about all the newest Switch stuff, of course. And JP hasn't stopped JP Switch Mania. So I'm assuming he's so tired he can come on today because he was probably up all night posting all the crazy amount of pre-orders that come out this week. Because it's been insane with the direct that happened last week.
Sure.
Like, I feel bad for the guy because he's like nonstop.
That's like, cool though, man. Again, you know, you guys playing the games, talking about the games, that total relatability, but then being able to then, like you so eloquently put it, pull that curtain back and see. I don't know. I guess I'm saying what I said already. Just bravo to you. You have a good podcast.
Thank you.
But another thing to touch on.
I've been listening to you guys over the year too. Like I think it was about a year ago. I think our mutual friend 8-Bit Steve like introduced me to you guys, and I've been.
Yep.
I listen on and off whenever there's an interesting topic. I'll pop it on. I think the last one that I caught, because for some reason it doesn't always pop into my feed because I go running. For you know, and I'll listen to a podcast. It was the Eastman episode.
Okay.
Oh, okay. With the Last Ronin episode.
Yeah, and then, I mean, I got a copy of the Last Ronin because I don't collect comics. Apparently, definitely got a copy of it. I pre-ordered it. It came in really late, but it's so cool.
Yeah, the second issue just came out this past Wednesday, and. It's even better.
I'm hoping I pre-ordered the series. I hope I pre-ordered the series.
Issue 2 is even better than issue 1. You will love it. You'll love it.
Damn.
But it's some of the best reading I've had in a while. But turtles aside, because if you get me on that, man, I'm not going to stop talking about the Ninja Turtles. I promise you. But your Switch collector books, I wanted to talk about those as well, because those look very good. And I guess I don't know exactly what is in them. Can you tell me and the listeners what they are exactly?
Sure, I can pull back the curtain a little. I've actually been publishing books for about 7 years now. I have 13 books published on various video games. Started with the NES. Did a complete NES book. I did every Nintendo Entertainment System game with the box art, the screenshots, and then a little spot where you could collect them and a little write-up on each game for the NES. That and I did amazing. This years before others were doing, because others have followed in my footsteps, and they're more popular on YouTube. And I did it like years before that. But I've been doing that, and I started my publishing myself and learning all myself because I went to a publishing company, and they were going to offer me like 5% or something ridiculous.
Oh, what?
And I'm like, I'll just figure it out myself. And there's like print-on-demand companies and stuff. And as I started to look, and I'm OCD, so as I started to look and I found more companies, and I found more like direct to warehouses and direct to printers. And like over the years, I've honed in the quality and everything. I've finally hit the stride. I've been working on a Sega Genesis book for like 4 years now, and people have been poking me because I did a Super Nintendo book that's 630 pages, covers all regions, everything. Like, it's insane. Did a Virtual Boy book
Holy shit.
The NES pamphlet. That NES home. Actually, you say pamphlet. The goal, the joke was I was going to make a 100-page hardcover Virtual Boy book. It's 180 pages.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. I covered every homebrew game because there's a lot of indie games on the Virtual
Boy. Okay, I did not know
and
that.
Yeah, and instead of doing like three games per page, I did full page spreads and made it and put a lot of screenshots, made it amazing. It's like an awesome tribute to the system.
That was so cool.
It was ironic. It could have been a pamphlet for sure. Like it could have been an instruction book or something. But yeah, I can't do anything small, unfortunately. that NES Oddities and the Homebrew Revolution book I mentioned earlier, that's 500 pages on NES Homebrew and Famicom games, Japanese exclusives. Like I did a Hidden Gaming Gems book that covered every generation from Pong all the way to the Switch. And that's another 500-page book. That's an amazing treat. A covered Oxiom version, that, for sure.
Oh, wow, that's nice.
And Battle Kid. And Battle Kid. I don't know if I've covered Meat Boy. Maybe. hadn't played Dead Souls at that time. So, Dead Souls.
I'm sure there's a Dead Souls game out there somewhere.
you're not wrong. It probably is. so then the latest idea, which actually stemmed from a year or two ago where I had an April Fool's joke and I'm like, I'm going to do the complete Switch. Like the complete Switch. It's not even all out yet. So that'd be kind of ironic.
Right.
And people were like, oh no, we need a Switch book. And they kept pinging me. So JP and I did Playcast. We're talking and I'm like, well, what if we did a Switch collector book and cover it every year? So that way I go to 2017, the first year, and we cover it. And instead of doing all these short little blippets, we do like page long blippets, and then with some games get 2 pages, or Zelda Breath of the Wild gets about 6 or 8 or something.
Ooh,
like it gets a lot. And then we allow, like, because I always take my books to Kickstarter and we allow the backers to write a story in the book about their Switch stories, which I think is super fun. And then we cover not only all the physical games that were released in year one, but the digital only games. And this is before premium, the digital only games that don't have a physical yet that we want to get a physical. And so I go back in my volume one. I'm looking back because it's over here. I'm looking back at volume one, and there are games now that have a physical release. And it's super cool that we have physical releases on these games. So it's kind of like, all right, companies, read this stuff now. These are the guys you need to reach out to because here's a game that you might like. And
cool.
I've been working on volume two now. I'm writing, and it's already been funded on Kickstarter. All I got to do is finish up a few reviews. Goal was to have it done by February. Premium edition had other ideas for me. But I was gonna be done in February. I'm finishing up the physical section. I finished up the digital only for volume two. Volume one was 312 pages. Volume two is going to be over 400 pages. And that's volume two only covers the first half of year two.
Wow.
First half.
That's crazy.
There are so many Switch games. It is insane. There are thousands now physically. And it was when we started the book series, there was like 600. Now there's over 1,000. And when you go to other regions that also support English and it's region free and like, oh my gosh. And then I hit a stretch goal on the first series where they're like, yeah, if we hit this stretch goal, we'll cover the Japanese games that don't support English so you can just know what they are for collectors. Well, I gotta be consistent now, and they hit the stretch goal. So I had to do like all the Japanese and all the non-English games. There are German games too, and I have those in there. Like, oh, why did they have to hit my OCD nature?
Seems like your OCD nature is really coming in handy, though.
The thing is, that's my solace, though. Otherwise, I'd drive my wife nuts around the house or something. So I just come in into the office here, the game room, and channel my negative energies toward making something look really cool.
That's awesome.
And over the years, too, on top of it, I've grown because Hagen's Alley is what it's called. Hagen's Alley, like my last name's Witten Hagen, and Hogan's Alley, my wife.
Came up with that. I see.
Hagen's Alley Books is the site. But I also have other authors now that I've signed. We just released a Easy Way Friday the 13th NES book where you can beat Friday the 13th if you play this book, which you literally can. It's ridiculous. I didn't think it was true. And he made me play it. So then I was like, all right, you got it.
Wow.
We have a history of Punch-Out book coming out from a different author because 8-Bit Steve's the one who did the Easy Way.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
There's a guy, Dan, that's doing a Punch-Out book that years ago went to Kickstarter, and he just never was able to be able to print it. And so we reached out to him and we're like, hey, so he did right by his backers and all that. But like we were like, hey, we can, you know, take this to Kickstarter. I'll help you get it to print, like, too easy. And then we're working on another one. It's like a history of Mortal Kombat. That's another book that another author's doing. Nice. And then if you know the YouTuber John Riggs, he's doing a cereal book. He's doing a book on cereals. Like,
hey, I would read that. I would read that.
Dude's a gamer, but he loves cereal. I'm like, yeah, we'll do a cereal book, man. That's so awesome. Like, and I mean, I'm taking what I went through, which is, you know, 5% to the authors. I'm like, no, it's the opposite way. Like, I'm just helping get you there. It depends on what work I have to put into it. If I got to create your whole book, okay, we'll talk. If it's, I'm literally just coordinating things, like, no, like, you need to get, you know, the monetary compensation for your work. So yeah. I'm actually helping out the smaller authors get their stuff out and in the best quality possible for the best affordable price and all that, because I've been figuring out things as I do.
Right. Well, that's amazing, man. Like, all the different pies you guys have your fingers in is freaking amazing. How you guys even have time to have it. Yeah. That looked a little perverted, but
sounded a little perverted too.
I guess you're right. I guess we're both guilty. But as far as people reaching out and like finding out more about you guys, you just mentioned HagensAlley.com, I believe, and then
it's HagensAlley.com is the book site. Yep.
And then on Twitter, I found at Premium Edition 1. Where else should we be directing people?
So the website for Premium Edition Games is premiumeditiongames.com. Real hard to
easy
find.
Enough, right?
Yeah, and we're at Premium Edition on the other things. I think the one you mentioned at Premium Edition 1, that Premium Edition was taken, so we had to take one.
Bastards.
We're the best.
Whatever. Yeah. But I mean, that it's just been a fun ride. So we have our first two games. They're open for pre-order, but if the Snowmageddon of Texas didn't just happen, like, the games would be shipping literally this week. So we're like, everything is just, we're just waiting on it to come in and be, I think it's in production this week. And everything was ordered. So that'll be the premium editions will be shipping now. The retro and deluxe, pulling back the curtain, there was something called the Chinese New Year that just happened. So it put a halt on all production for an entire month. Wow. So that picks up this week. So this week, we should start making progress and getting things. And it takes about 4 to 6 to arrive from overseas to arrive. So about 4 to 6 weeks, we should be shipping the retro and deluxe editions, including the book and everything, because the strategy guide has been completely written and everything, too. Well, it's over 120 pages.
That's amazing, man.
Maybe 200 pages. It's close. It's insane.
It's not a pamphlet.
Yeah. No. I mean, we even did a history of how we made the physical in the back of the book. Like,
that is awesome.
Crazy stuff. That stuff's coming. Unfortunately, Switch Collector Volume 1's been sold out for a while. So I may have to, like, do another print run in the future. So that way those that want to get Volume 2 can get Volume 1. So didn't think of that when I took Volume 2 to Kickstarter. I'm like, oh, I should probably just have did a combo pack and allowed some funds to be raised so we could just print more copies for people. Because, you know, we do small batch printings when it comes to the book stuff. Like, I like to keep it, like, based on the support that everybody has. Allows me to keep doing it. So that's how I roll. You know, with the Switch, it's a little different because Nintendo has minimum quantities and for the quality, but as minimum quantities that are available. So, I sold a lot of books up at Hagen's Alley that people can check out, giant Super Nintendo books and fun compendiums of stories. And I like to do like the history of Nintendo from our perspective, growing up with it, and different stuff that nobody's touched. It's really fun.
They're cool. I've saw some samples online, and everything you guys are creating is very well done, and there's a lot of care and respect going into the medium. So just thank you so much, Jeff, for being here to talk about all this and just hang out and have fun with us. This has been freaking amazing, man.
Thanks, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Absolutely.
Jack, what do we have on the website, sir?
Go to CannedAirPodcast.com where you can see show highlights, guest info, listen to the show, follow us on all our social media, become a patron, buy some merch. And if you scroll all the way to the bottom of the page, click on that evergreen link and find another podcast, but keep listening to us. And if you'd like to be a guest and promote your work, send us an email on our contacts page.
Listen to them after us, not before. After.
That's right. Drink Everclear while you listen to them, too.
You can find us on Twitter at CannedAirPod and on Instagram at Canned_Air. And again, on the website, the Patreon button. If you want to show some support, get some extra content in return for said support and merchandise, exclusive merchandise over there, depending on how much you donate. It's all over there at patreon.com/CannedAirPod. And those awesome patches, those things are so great. Yeah,
I'm messing with them in the camera on this audio-only podcast.
I know, but still, they're so freaking cool.
It's I've been doing it the whole time we're recording. It's great.
Honestly, when you first brought those things up, when you were saying people take a picture of their score, I thought for sure you were going to say, and then put it on a 5x7 self-addressed card and send it to, you know.
Right. I mean, you want to mention comic books before we wrap up. I was involved with, and this will pull back the curtain again, Manny Asadi's book, the artist was involved with Disney. He did Beauty and the Beast, he did The Little Mermaid, he did Dragon's Lair, and he did my cover of my book. He's associated with a guy who does comic books. He did this comic book called The Haunted Tales of Bachelor's Grove. I put in a promo for Hagen Deli Books in there, and I literally had a spot where you could cut out and mail in to join the fun club.
That's so cool, man. I love
it's
that
a comic book.
I love that.
I got
that
stories, guys. I got stories.
We're going to have to
weird stuff.
We're going to have you back on, and maybe Jonathan can free up some time to come too. And we are just going to have a blast because this has been fucking amazing. We've had a lot of fun here.
I'm crazy. Jonathan's the crazy one. I'm the normal one.
Wow. That's going to make for a good episode then. All right, everyone. I think that's going to do it for this week. So until next time, I am Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
I'm Randy Hardenbrook.
And I'm Jeffrey Wittenhagen.
Thanks so much for listening, everyone, and be excellent to each other.
My parents are mean, so I'm running away from home.
Where you gotta go?
I don't know yet, but that'll show them.
It sure will.
Shipwreck!
Parents just don't understand, and it gets lonely on the road, so be sure to listen to the Canned Air podcast.
And now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe!
This has been a Canned Air production.
Hi, this is comedian and writer, and let's be honest, I do a lot of things. This is Dean Archipotis, the host of Whiskey Business, the podcast not so much about whiskey as it is one with whiskey. Yes, we drink and talk about whiskey, but we do so much more with so many interesting people. For example, we talk to comedians like Greg Warren.
You know, I don't want to brag, but let's just say I can walk into a Red Lobster and get whatever. You know, I think the pause right there is probably more important than the word.
Amazing athletes like boxing champion Buster Douglas.
When a fighter's down and he's looking for his mouthpiece instead of trying to get up.
That's when I knew it was over.
Yeah, right?
And yes, Bigfoot chasers.
Do you believe in Bigfoot? And if so, does he really eat beef jerky?
The Bigfoot thing is people have seen these, and I've seen a lot of compelling evidence about it.
It's Whiskey Business with Dean Archipotis. Join us for what we call a good conversation with a good pour. You really can't ask for much more than that, can you, people? Check us out at WhiskeyBusinessPod.com, a proud member of the Evergreen Podcast Network.